Good morning. It's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to have you with us today. I hope your day's doing well. Later this hour, Gustavo Arellano, the newest columnist for the Los Angeles Times. Well, he's been a columnist before. Maybe you read the OC Weekly with his Ask a Mexican column, which was a lot of fun. Also, Gustavo's been a reporter for many years, an author as well, and a frequent guest with us on Air Talks. His chance to talk with him about his new column, and for him as an OC native to talk about all the changes taking place in Southern California. Speaking of changes in our region, downtown Los Angeles, like other downtowns across the country, has been hit particularly hard by COVID-19, with far fewer people going into high-rise office buildings, with bars and restaurants and tourist attractions closed. It's been particularly difficult for downtowns in this country to financially keep themselves upright. And what about for the thousands of people who live in downtown areas and moved there largely because of those amenities, which at least for now are not available? So we're going to take a look at the future of downtown Los Angeles and consider what sort of a future the area has. This precipitated by a Los Angeles Times story by Thomas Kerwin, which looks at downtown and the challenge of its recovery. We begin with John Rigardi, longtime journalist and writer, former executive editor of the Los Angeles Downtown News. John, it's a great pleasure to have you with us this morning.
Thank you, Larry.
So let's talk about, I mean, the downtown of today, of course, is so different than even a decade ago, with tens of thousands of residents in downtown now, and them going there largely because of, you know, what it offers you can't get anywhere else in Los Angeles. Is that still going to be there, you think, post-pandemic?
You know, it's going to be interesting. I mean, what you have to think about, though, Larry, when you first overall look at downtown, is where downtown was versus where it is today. And, you know, and I would even go a little further back than you did to, you know, to 20 years ago. I mean, you know, back in the last millennium, downtown was a place where you basically had about 500,000 workers who would come in each day. They'd drive in, they'd work. There was very little to do after dark. Then they would leave, maybe the music center, maybe a club, underground club in the arts district. You start to see this vast transformation, catalytic projects such as Staples Center, Disney Hall, the cathedral driving the evolution. Then you started to see housing pop up first in the historic core. Other developers started to realize, hey, there's a change going on. We could make some money. You know, things moved forward. Things slowed down a bit during the recession. But then in the last decade, as you mentioned, there was really just this vast evolution. You had thousands and thousands of housing units being created. Along with those housing units came a lot of different amenities. You had food, you had cultural and nightlife openings, everything from the Broad Museum up on the Bunker Hill area to the rock and roll clubs, the region, and the Terragram Ballroom, the repositioning of Grand Central Market. Now, there have always been problems. You have a terrible homelessness problem in downtown LA, which the city has not adequately responded to. There's issues of, you know, pedestrian issues and all that. But you do, you know, sort of pre-pandemic, and that's where we get to talk, looking at what you're talking about today. You have a community that did come back from essentially a very faded urban area to one that, if not quite a 24/7 community, was pretty close to it. There's still a lot of potential, but there are certainly going to be issues.
And John, does it matter to the long-term health of downtown if a high percentage of office workers return to those buildings? Can the residents sustain all the entertainment options there, keep those bars and restaurants going once it's safe for people to go to them?
Well, that's going to be really interesting because it's going to depend on, you know, on what happens with the residential base. One thing that I think did happen is downtown boomed is a lot of people moved into this area to be close to jobs. Downtown has and always has been, or downtown has long been, the job center of downtown LA. So a lot of these new arrivals were people who wanted to live somewhere where they could work. So they didn't have to be in the car for 2 hours a day going back and forth. Now, the question is, post-pandemic, what's going to happen with some of these buildings? Will they be able to continue continue as their office space? Can some of them potentially transform into housing and lure others? You know, hard to know. Changing a skyscraper is an expensive and time-consuming process. And then for the people who stay, will they still want to, you know, if people can work from their homes, will they want to be in downtown? Certainly some probably will. Some might leave. Others may be drawn here depending on what does happen. It's a resilient community. It's shown an ability to change. It's got smart people and a lot of people who care about it. I think there, you know, we're really going to have to find out a lot in coming weeks, months, years.
We're talking with the former executive editor of the Los Angeles Downtown News, journalist and writer John Regardi, who's covered downtown for many, many years. I'd like to hear from you if you live or typically work downtown, even if you're not going into a downtown office now, if that's where your office is that you might return to at some point. I'd like to hear what you think the future of downtown holds. We're at 866-893-KPCC. The Air Talk page, kpcc.org. Let us know. Are things just going to, you know, fairly quickly evolve back to where they were before once people can safely go out? Or is it going to be a vastly different downtown in the future? Also with us, President CEO of the Central City Association, advocacy organization working to enhance downtown LA, Jessica Law. Jessica, thank you very much for being with us. What are your biggest concerns about the future of downtown?
Well, I just want to start by thanking you for having me. And I think John did a great job highlighting the history and elements of downtown. I think while things right now are hard and have been hard, no community is set up for recovery better than downtown Los Angeles. You know, one thing to build off what John said, downtown's, you know, historically been the city center for rebuilding and resilience after the riots, the 94 earthquake, 9/11. The 2008 financial crisis. People thought it would be the death of cities, but we've come back stronger each time. So to answer your question, Larry, I think, you know, we need to just continue to make sure that we understand downtown LA's role in playing an outsized role for the city in terms of our recovery and make sure that we take advantage of all of the elements and assets that downtown has to bring our city back to life again. We have, you know, not been operating with council representation for the last couple of years, which has been really a big part of the challenges that we face currently. We're really fortunate that Councilmember-elect Kevin De Leon will be assuming role early next month, and we really hope to work with him and the city's leadership to, you know, reactivate entertainment and culture. Large gatherings may not be possible or accessible in the same rate right now, but that does not mean entertainment has stopped. We're seeing incredible innovations of people being brought together in new and creative ways to make the best of this time. And when it is safe to gather again, the demand for sports, music, culture, and art will still be high. We know that improving workplace safety is on top of everyone's mind. Downtown is the cutting edge place where we have businesses who are attracting people from around the world, and they've already been experimenting with technologies to adapt it to a new normal. Companies we know are rethinking creatively to redesign workplaces that accommodate safe distancing for offices and creating tools like fever detection, contact tracing, smart architecture, touchless utilities, and whatnot. Yeah. You know, transit is also one of the main, you know, connectors for downtown to the rest of the city. And we know that major investments are being made in our transit system to make sure that people still can move around safely. And we have projects like the regional connector underway. There's also been massive investments in things like bike lanes, bus lanes, green space, parks. And we know, you know, Los Angeles has, you know, great weather. And with this infrastructure being put into place, we're going to be able to move people around safely.
And that's, of course, when it's people feel safe about using public transit in large numbers. And obviously the connector downtown is allowing the Gold Line and the Blue Line to be contiguous. And it's going to be a huge boon to public transit. But first, we got to get the other side of the pandemic for more people to feel safe about doing that. Jessica, do you... If office occupancy does not come back to where it was. And there's a significant drop because more companies are comfortable having a significant percentage of workforce working from home. How big a financial hit is that for the businesses downtown?
Sure, Larry. I mean, I think without question, workspace is being reimagined right now. And I think we have companies that are, you know, on the forefront of leading and making sure that we can bring people back to work safely. And I don't think it's a matter of if people are going to ever come back to the office or permanently work from home. You know, people are talking through people coming to the offices and shifts, different groups of people at different times. So I think we need to be more, it's not a black or white, it's more of a, you know, what does the future look like for office space so people can continue to be safe, continue some of the work-life balance that's been rediscovered during the pandemic.
We're talking with Jessica Lall, President, CEO of the Central City Association. Ralph, in Woodland Hills, I understand you are a multi-decade downtown Los Angeles employee. So what do you think the future holds there?
Larry, I think that anyone who has worked in the downtown area for any period of time, much less the 30 years that I've been there, has witnessed what, I'm sorry to say, the proponents of downtown, however well-intentioned they might be, completely refuse to acknowledge, which is just how compromised, dangerous, and fragile an area it always has been and as it remains. I'll give you two quick anecdotes. One is, in the area that I'm in, which is close to the government centers, et cetera, there's never been a Starbucks. And what does that tell you? Not that Starbucks is the end-all and be-all. They wouldn't come close to locating in a situation that they don't believe has any upside, because they're certainly everywhere else. A friend of mine recently went to the fish market from the suburbs, hadn't been downtown in years, told me he was boggled at the extent of the homelessness, people wandering in streets, unclothed. It is, I'm sorry to say, in many sections of downtown, it is a stunningly frightening place. And they can keep building Staples Centers and some other satellites for the rich who never come onto those streets. But downtown Los Angeles is a very, very somber place to be.
Ralph, appreciate your observation as a longtime commuter to downtown Los Angeles for work. Speaking of homelessness, General Jeff Page, as he goes by, is Skid Row community activist. He's the chair of the Skid Row Neighborhood Council Formation Committee. General Jeff, thank you for being with us. We'll try and get him up so that we can talk with him. Also with us is author Lisa Napoli, who has been with us many times on Air Talk. She's a longtime downtown resident. Lisa, thank you for being with us. Lisa, what do you think are the hurdles to downtown LA coming back post-pandemic?
Wow, I wish I had a crystal ball, Larry, and thanks for including me in this fascinating conversation, which we have here on Bunker Hill, where I've lived now for 16 years every single day. To that last caller about Starbucks, I was laughing because there are Starbucks, or there were Starbucks, on every corner, every nook and cranny of down here. And I've watched the city evolve, and I wrote for John many times at the Downtown News when he was in charge of it. And I love this corner of the city, and it's devastating to see it now. And to imagine that if, as the lady was saying about the cutbacks of offices, if that happens, right now it's a ghost town, but even if half the people came back, and when that's going to happen, who knows, the vibrancy that was finally happening here, it feels gone. It is gone. I lived here before this revolution, before the Broad Museum made this compelling, fabulous hipster place to visit, Grand Central Market being revivified, and, you know, tourists on the corners walking all around. I was here right after Disney Concert Hall opened, and I've watched this whole transition, and overnight it just went away. And I don't see, in answer to your question, how it will come back anytime soon. Of course, I want it to. I don't mean to be a pessimist, but optimistically, I mean, realistically, I just don't see. And meanwhile, I'm looking out the window at that Grand, the new Gary double building across the street from the Disney, and they're working on it 24 hours a day, or at least it feels that way. They're working 24/7 on the Metro Regional Connector, which is also out my window. So there's activity and there's this promise of life.
They're building it, but will there be people to come? And Lisa, the other thing is offices, because you can distance in an office, may come back long before you've got a full Walt Disney concert hall or museums able to take capacity crowds. And, you know, even if the L.A. Phil is back performing at Disney, if it's only going to be at 25% of capacity and most people are watching it on a video stream, that's going to have a huge impact on your neighborhood.
Yes, yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I mean, of course, the bigger picture here, and you talk about this every day, is that every single aspect of our lives has been indelibly impacted by this. And we don't know what's going to happen next. And it's exciting to hear that people are planning thoughtfully and thinking thoughtfully about the future. But that thoughtfulness is not reality. It doesn't mean, you know, what my neighbors here will actually do or what tourists or any of the folks, the caller who comes down here for work every day, who knows what how it's going to pan out. And that's the scary part for me. And in planning my future, as much as I've ever planned my future, how do you factor in all of these unknowns? There's always unknowns, but now more than ever, there's no way to factor in. And this issue with unhoused people, it's devastating. The LA hotel across the street is housing people, and that's great. But what does that mean? The bigger picture is not being addressed.
Lisa, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for sharing your perceptions as a 16-year resident of Bunker Hill, downtown LA. We appreciate it.
Of course.
And Lisa, you should know tomorrow we're talking about a brand new book on the history of Bunker Hill. That'll be tomorrow here on Air Talk, of course, where Lisa lives looks very different today than it did back when Bunker Hill was adorned with mansions that later became rooming houses. We're talking about the future of downtown Los Angeles. We'll talk with General Jeff Page, who's a Skid Row community activist, and we'll talk with USC professor Jim Moore, who's been with us on the program many times to talk about public transportation. He's a downtown LA resident as well, so he can wear both hats as a resident as well as an infrastructure expert. So we'll talk with him too. And I'd like to hear from you. If you live downtown, if you have typically worked downtown, what do you see as the future of the core of the city of Los Angeles post-COVID-19? 866-893-KPCC. Back in just a minute. Isabella in downtown Los Angeles says, I'm a longtime resident. I'm not happy about the changes I've seen in the Arts District. Years ago, I used to take the bus, but now I'm scared of spending time in a district that years ago I used to get breakfast in. I wish the city could fix the current homeless situation in the area. That by far the biggest complaint about downtown Los Angeles. And with us, General Jeff Page, Skid Row community activist, who goes by the name General Jeff Page. Thank you, sir, for joining us. And your thoughts about the state of homelessness now in downtown. How does it compare to what we saw pre-pandemic?
Hey, Larry, thanks for having me on again. Always a pleasure to be here. And so one thing I want to jump right in and get to it is that while this show is about the future of downtown Los Angeles and what that looks like, but while there are a lot of unknown variables, the one guaranteed constant variable that we do know is that Skid Row and homelessness will guaranteed be a part of downtown Los Angeles' future. And so just like even pre adaptive use ordinance, which began with Staples Center in 1999, Skid Row was here as well. And so in some way, shape, or form, Skid Row has been in existence in downtown Los Angeles for over 100 years. So there's no signs of slowing down. The problem is there's a lot of money being thrown at it, but it's not the appropriate and necessary oversight and is not being attached to it. And so there's a problem. And so myself and other homeless activists here in Skid Row and residents, we've stood up and been crying out for years. And so it's extremely difficult for us to wait on, quote unquote, the system to come up with the solutions to help us. And none of their solutions are working. So we, the people of Skid Row, have taken upon ourselves to create our own solutions. That's why I'm also the chair of the Skid Row Neighborhood Council Formation Committee. And we attempted to create our own Skid Row Neighborhood Council. And to our surprise, we actually caught resistance from the rest of many in the downtown community, including the downtown business sector. And so that was in 2017 when we had our election. And here we are 3 years later, and the issues have not only continue to exist, but they've gotten even worse.
General Jeff, you mentioned the solutions that residents of Skid Row themselves are advocating. What are a couple of those that you think would make a significant difference?
Well, I mean, just first of all, they're basic quality of life issues, such as, you know, I'm born and raised, I'm a homegrown Angeleno. While I grew up in a poor community, I wasn't born and raised in trash and filth. And so when I moved to Skid Row, you know, that's what they call low hanging fruit. We can easily at least be able to get the trash and debris off the streets. And so the problem is, when I first moved to Skid Row in August 2006, there weren't any trash cans. And there's a lot of resistance from Los Angeles Police Department and other entities. And so we have to fight against the system just to get our quality of life issues addressed. There is a lack of access to water fountains. You know, in the summer times when it's 100 degree weather, we had two water fountains in our two Skid Row pocket parks. But when the parks close at 5-6 o'clock p.m., that means at night there's no access to water in Skid Row. And so we've worked diligently over the years to increase the trash collection options. The installation in the city of Los Angeles has finally started responding. We have more water fountain access, a lot of positive programming, because, what do homeless people do all day, every day? You have to give folks something positive to do instead of waiting on the nonprofits and the city elected officials to come up with solutions. And so, now the concern is with the global pandemic, and now also with all these brush fires, with unhealthy air quality, masks are not enough, but we've got a lot of unhealthy living conditions. And now what we also fight for as activists here is fire station number 9 in Skid Row is annually the busiest fire station in the nation. And so we're wow. fighting for resources directed to that. And it's not forest fires in Skid Row. It's a lot of ODs, a lot of people lacking healthy, nutritious lifestyles, lacking nutrients. And so, there's a grassroots organization that started a farmer's market in Skid Row.
All right.
There's a lot of positive performing artists, troops here in Skid Row. And so we want to be a part of the same downtown Los Angeles, that we want a vibrant and healthy Skid Row community, but we're getting so much resistance, and it's a lot of the negative stereotypical misnomers that are preventing us from getting the resources we need, and it's so frustrating.
General Jeff, when you hear people talk about their feeling of a lack of safety because of the very visible homeless population, we have terrible incidents. The guy who would tailor my suits was pushed by a homeless person in front of a vehicle and critically injured. And we have stories that we hear about experiences of people downtown. So what do you say to those who say it's not safe because of the homeless population?
Well, I think the issue is valid, but the people pointing the fingers in the wrong direction. People do crime. Crime happens all over the world. Drugs, people do drugs all over the world. There's homelessness all over the world. Why is it this specific area? So then we have to go back, and when we talk about policies and initiatives, you can't talk about the true situation in Skid Row without going back to the 1970s, where the Skid Row containment zone policy was created. So that's our elected officials that created this zone that basically says you can do whatever it is you want to do in this area, just don't do it out beyond this area. And so, in essence, they created an outdoor mental facility. And so now here we are decades later, and folks want to convert downtown Los Angeles to this vibrant community, which it should and can be. But what are we going to do in terms of Skid Row?
All
and
right.
So a lot of the leadership, just like Jessica Lyle mentioned moments ago, our city council member that represents downtown Los Angeles, you know, was in handcuffs dealing with some federal, you know, charges. And so we don't have the representation in City Hall to fight, continue fighting for the resources that we need. So we're desperately for a former state senator, Kevin DeLeon, to get in office and help us in Skid Row. We're crying out for help. We're not trying to be, you know, indigent and just forever.
We're talking with General Jeff Page. He's referring there to former L.A. City Councilman Jose Huizar, who's facing a number of federal corruption charges and the district essentially going unrepresented as the 14th Council District has been without a council member to be able to represent the interests. We're at 866-893-KPCC as we talk about the future of downtown Los Angeles. With us, USC Professor of Public Policy and Director of the Transportation Engineering Program, James E. Moore. Professor, it's good to have you with us again. Now, you live downtown, and, you know, how different is it today than 6 months ago?
Well, thank you. Pardon me. Thank you for having me. It's quite different. It's quite different because of the pandemic. Downtown was a vibrant place before the pandemic, and I've been listening closely to what the guests have had to say. I think they've offered a lot of insight. We all make lousy forecasts. That's absolutely true. If anybody tells you they know what's going to happen in the office space market, they're misrepresenting themselves. But I do remain optimistic that we will be back in business fairly quickly. I have reasons for feeling that way.
Adaptive reuse of historic buildings has been key to the residential vibrancy of downtown Los Angeles. If it's going to be necessary to convert some of the high-rise office space because there simply aren't enough employees who are going to be brought back to offices, do you think there is potential for that sort of adaptive reuse to residential in high rises?
The short answer is yes. If we look at what the adaptive reuse policy engendered, it was really, it shouldn't have been called adaptive reuse. It should have been called the, we've destroyed downtown with our land use policies, let's stop shooting ourselves in the foot ordinance. I mean, it was just prior to 1999, the condition of downtown really reflected, in my opinion, government failure. And what we did was relax local authorities' stranglehold on the market for urban land and allowed it to respond. And we allowed the market to speak. And the market only, the market works when people can make some money, and you only make money when you're providing goods and services that people actually want. And that is exactly what happened. So I think we should take delivery on the lesson that we observed there. In the 30 years prior to 1999, downtown added less than 5,000 housing units. And in the 10 years following the adaptive reuse ordinance, they added 8,000 units, or close to 8,000 units, not quite that. And there are a number of reasons that that occurred, but they all really had to do with not interfering in unreasonable ways with how the steps that developers had to go through to convert buildings from one use to another. And if we say, all right, we created an explosion of economic activity and success by stepping back a little bit and letting the market operate, then before we begin fretting about what's going to happen to those high-rises, we should say, all right, there was a lot of high-rise construction downtown post-adaptive reuse. That was all residential, all of it. None of it was office space. It is expensive to convert high-rise space, but if we don't make it more expensive by making it administratively difficult, and just let the market speak, we should. I think we will see the same sort of very constructive, vibrant outcomes that we saw in the previous 20 years. The market helped us before. There's no reason to believe that making it difficult for the market to operate would improve our position. So we should let it operate to the extent that we can. And if we go too far, we can tighten up a little bit. And if we don't like the outcomes, we can always re-exert more public authority. But we should step back and let the folks who own the space that are currently occupied by office by fire, basically by fire insurance and real estate, or by finance and insurance and real estate, let the folks who own that space decide how best they can offer it to the market, and then let people go ahead and bid for that use. And many people will bid for it.
We're talking with Jim Moore, USC Professor of Public Policy and Director of SC's Transportation Engineering Program. John Rigardi, former executive editor of the LA Downtown News. That seems so anathema to LA city officials, that sort of let the market decide approach that Jim is outlining. What do you think?
You know, look, it's possible, and you know, and he's right. I mean, the key to adaptive reuse was that it did allow is that it made converting old buildings much easier and much cheaper. So, you know, certainly if there is, you know, an opportunity, and as Jessica Law mentioned, if there is finally effective leadership in downtown LA with council member elect Kevin DeLeon taking over, you could potentially see the possibility, you know, of change. But I think, Larry, what's also important as we look forward is we have to recognize that, you know, downtown, one other advantage it has, Larry, is it's a community of very active people. And the time that I was covering it at Downtown News, this was a community with a lot of supporters. These are people who, you know, the residents of downtown are all people who chose to live in the community, as opposed to people who may have grown up in the suburbs and always lived there or gone back there. You know, very few people who are in downtown now were born there. They came into this community. A lot of people got involved with neighborhood councils, worked, you know, all across the community to make it better, whether Bunker Hill, whether Skid Row, or as General Jeff eloquently pointed out, Skid Row also, South Park. So, you know, people will still be coming here. Once this pandemic ends, more people will move to LA. A lot of these people will have lived in cities in the past. They will be open to the possibility of living in a metropolis like downtown LA. And if enough of them come, there will be the pressure to, you know, to consider this type of living.
Let's talk with Rachel in downtown Los Angeles, who's owned a number of businesses going back to 2008. So, Rachel, I understand you have a bar downtown right now. What do you see as the future?
Yes, I do. I have a bar downtown currently. Obviously, we're closed at this time. And I'm right on the cusp of Skid Row and the historic core. I'm two or three blocks from City Hall. And I've been downtown for 12 years. I opened my first business in 2008. I've always had bars and restaurants. And I came downtown with the promise of revitalization. And it's gotten worse. The homelessness is worse now than it was in 2008, before we even had a juice bar downtown. So, you know, they can build as much as they want. You know, Frank Gehry can build 5 more buildings. And towers can keep going up. But unless the issue of homelessness is addressed, no one's going to want to open anything at the ground level. Right now, the only thing that opens downtown, unless you're in the arts district, you can go to a bar or a restaurant. There's nowhere else to go. You can't go into a bookstore or, well, there's one bookstore, but you can't go
the last bookstore.
Yeah, there's nowhere else to go. I mean, you can't go buy a vase. You can't go buy a card for someone. You can't. I mean, there's no...
It's no diversification of the economy.
Hospitality, exactly. And that's because of the homelessness.
Rachel,
a really, really big problem.
I appreciate it, and we wish you all the best. We're certainly aware of how unbelievably challenging this is for people in the business you're in right now. Let's talk with Simon in the Mid-Wilshire District. You're on Air Talk. Simon, you there?
Yes.
Hi, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention about the fact that you or somebody else, one of your guests, mentioned that downtown LA would be the core of LA and centrality of it. And I wanted to say otherwise, because I've been in the tourist business for close to 30 years in LA, and I've lived also in London, in New York for many years, and every city, every big and major city, they have a centrum. There is a downtown. There is a real downtown that people no matter what, they end up in for everything that they need.
Yeah, and you don't see downtown L.A. as being comparable to that. Simon, I appreciate it very much. I'm sorry I don't have time to take more calls, but I want to thank our terrific guests for joining us. John Rigardi, longtime L.A. journalist and writer. Jessica Lall, president and CEO of the Central City Association. General Jeff Page, the de facto mayor of Skid Row, and Jim Moore, USC public policy professor. It's Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. From the future of downtown Los Angeles to the new columnist for the Los Angeles Times, but he's not new to us. Frequent Air Talk guest Gustavo Arellano will be with us when we come back in 90 seconds.